Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. It is Tuesday, the 21st of April. Very nice to have you with us. And we have a lot to talk about, and we know that you have a lot in your mind as well. You can join us and share your thoughts, roundtable at wamc.org. You know, and you could even kind of go along with the topics that we're talking about. That's helpful. Just saying. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and you can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable, today's post, 4/21/15, oddly enough, today's date. So let us begin. We have a lot to talk about, and I'm just going to I think there's a lot of stories that we could start with. I'm going to start with the Baltimore arrest and the spinal cord death story. This is a fascinating, horrific story, because a lot of it we don't know. This is what we do know. A 25-year-old man died several days after being arrested by Baltimore police. He suffered a fatal spinal injury, according to authorities. As city officials announced that six police officers have been suspended, Freddie Gray died Sunday, a week after Baltimore City Police arrested him. A charging document obtained Monday by the Baltimore Sun said Gray, quote, fled unprovoked upon noticing police presence.
Oh, my gosh.
Video of the arrest played by police at a news conference Monday did not show how Gray suffered his injury, which Deputy Police Commissioner Jerry Rodriguez described as a very tragic injury to his spinal cord, which resulted in his death, citing the preliminary results of an autopsy. What we don't know and what we need to get to is how that injury occurred, according to Rodriguez. He noted that when Mr. Gray was put in that van, he could talk, he was upset, and when he was taken out of the van, he could not talk, and he could not breathe.
Wow. They get worse and worse.
So the obvious question is, first of all, and we were discussing this a little bit before we went on the air, but the two questions are, one, is it the result of an injury that happened outside of the van and then the condition quickly worsened while in the van, or was there a continued injury or a beating is the word you're looking for. Suspected, sure. Alleged that would have taken place in the van to have caused that.
Joe, do you think that six officers would be suspended right now if somebody didn't know something? In other words, you don't just preemptorily, cut the legs off of your off your officers, unless you suspect and you're the authorities that something's going on.
I don't know. It seemed to me that it came. What do you say?
Post hoc propter hoc.
Yeah, that's right. that's the Chartockian language that I was
actually
looking for.
Mario Cuomo.
Okay, all right. The Cuomo slash.
There's a black mayor in that city.
Yes,
a black
there
woman
is
mayor.
Black woman mayor. Yes, although I found her statement just as annoyingly incomplete as the ones coming from every other mayor in this situation, of which there are an astoundingly horrible number. She might have acted. There's also national awareness of this explosion of violence against minorities. Yeah, I think they took the action of suspending those officers because they had to, because they know anything.
Could I just ask you whether there's a possibility that there isn't an explosion of violence, but that it has always been violent?
That's the case.
You know,
for those of us who have been black since the beginning, this is not news. And that's what you hear black journalists and others on air saying, that it's news for white America. For us, it's business as usual. And it just so happens that we're in a historical period when these stories are being reported because of the cameras and because of the outcry of the community at large, which includes people who are not black, who are very, very, very upset and repulsed by what's going on. So, no, it's not that it's suddenly a new wave of incidents. We can go back, Eleanor Bumpers, Howard Beach, many people.
The New York Times had a wonderful
Oscar
story
Grant
this week.
In California.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just over and over again. It's just now we have the technology to actually follow people's tracks. Now, what I heard this morning that I found of great interest is that there was someone else in that vehicle, that police vehicle that he was being transported in, someone else who was in custody.
And do we know, we don't know if they were in any relation, because there wasn't really an incident here that they were responding to, right? That,
no,
like, he didn't
I mean,
really
that's
do
the
anything.
Worst thing. I mean, Walter Scott ended up killed in South Carolina for a broken taillight. But this kid ran. I mean, there's no evidence he did anything other than...
And he had a very low level of criminal involvement with the police. So I don't even know if he'd ever even been in jail.
Let me just bring into this, guys, the new report this morning from the overseer of the New York City Police Department, who has just come out with training material for the new cadets and everybody else, and has among them some astounding things. You know, don't stereotype, don't assume, don't imitate somebody's voice when you're arresting them, you know, with a dialect. Don't, there are an awful lot of don'ts in this thing.
I hope people can see me rolling my eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like he's getting them ready for camera performances, actually.
No, that's not what I mean. What I'm saying, I'm talking about the very idea that you would imitate someone to belittle them. You know, at a time of great, you know,
apparently
great
goes on
already.
All the time. Yes. And this was in response, this report and this this overseer was in response to the stop and frisk challenge in New York City, which went over the top. The federal judge said this is over the top. And this is apparently the part of the response to it.
I just was thinking of, in this particular case, of what we're talking about in Baltimore, and as Rosemary indicated, that we don't believe there was anything he ran. You know, and you're always talking about this, Alan, and it's a good point of how you project yourself into that situation. Well, if I'm that kid, I'd run too. Why wouldn't you run?
Well, it's a normal response. Fear, you know, what is it? Fear and flight?
Fight or flight.
Yeah, fear and flight. Yeah, fight or flight. Yeah, so... I mean, and the thing is, given the history, and we're talking about hundreds of years of history, we're not talking about the last month or 2 years. We're talking about a whole trajectory from enslavement until now, our relationship with law enforcement. The law enforcement system in this country was really developed around enslavement. Yes, there were people drunk in the streets of New York, et cetera, during colonial times. But the thing is that the really draconian measures and the attitudes of police and the dogs and et cetera.
So
that was to keep property where property belonged.
Let me ask you this question. It's maybe a little bit rambling, but you know, I was showing, of all things, a compilation of Merv Griffin to my class a couple weeks ago because I wanted to show them about sort of this daytime television thing. And they were showing a clip of Merv Griffin from 1960-something with Dick Gregory. And Dick Gregory was talking about the violence between police and African Americans. And this is, I believe, 1966 somewhere. And you know, the thought is, and I remember, I just thinking to myself, well, yeah, okay, well, here we are. I mean, it's as if he was talking today. So to your point of saying there have been all of these incidents, so I present to you as a panel, with all of this and this spate over the last 6-8 months of news stories where the press seems to be picking up on it, if this doesn't change it, if those horrible incidents that happened prior in decades prior didn't change it, what the hell is going to change it?
Well, this country has never really delved into a founding principle, which is the principle of white supremacy. We've dealt with racism. We've dealt with discrimination. We've dealt with race relations. We've dealt with prejudice. We've dealt with bigotry. But we've never really looked at the system of white supremacy and how that is so absolutely embedded in all of our institutions. It's very, very hard to get it out of American democracy without an actual frontal attack on it. That has never occurred. So,
but I don't even, what would a frontal attack look like?
It would, first of all, acknowledging that the system existed. That would be the first thing. And then to really dig deep into how does this continue to unfold. The fact that you talked about the 1960s, there were major race riots in Harlem in the 1940s during World War II,
right,
because of police brutality.
And And nothing came out of that.
Well, the thing is, when do those who actually get to make decisions make a decision that this is top, at the top of the list?
I think things are significantly different now because of the very thing we just began talking about. There's technology now that shows it's happening. It isn't just blacks are saying this and white cops are saying, no, we're doing what we're supposed to.
But meanwhile,
there
it's
is widespread disgust. There's widespread disgust among the population, white and black and Hispanic, everybody. There's no one defending this. And that means you're going to get action, I think. And we're seeing all cops required to wear cameras will be the first step. And
I agree with you, but this happened last Sunday, which is just days after the incident that happened before it, that happened before it, that happened before it, that happened before it. I mean, why isn't there immediate disgust and response of saying we can't do this?
Because of people who are carrying out these positions, who are fulfilling these positions, they have those attitudes that I was trying to illuminate. They have tapes in their head that have not been questioned or removed.
Yeah.
What you were talking about, Ellen, as far as those new policies with the New York City Police Department, policy has to address it. Thank goodness for the Justice Department, Eric Holder, and if Loretta Lynch would ever get confirmed. Yeah, she would carry that on as well. At least there is action on a federal level and also on a governmental level, and at least certain places around changing how we interact with the police. In Albany, we've been very fortunate. We have community policing in Albany. I'm not saying we have perfection by any means, but what we have
had
over the
last... But we have had concerning incidents.
Yes, we have, but the thing is they have occurred in the context of a police department that wishes to change and has changed their relationship with the community. I live in Arbor Hill, so, and I was on the city council
Absolutely.
For two terms, so I know a bit about that.
Okay, so let's
have an incident, though, in Albany right now involving a young man who had mental issues, and police tasered him, and the question is, why did they approach him anyway? But they tasered him, and he died. And there have been protests in the city about that, despite community policing. So I don't think these incidences are ever going to go away. And Baltimore cops must be the most surprised at all. They have a young 25-year-old kid who's in apparent health. They must have thought they were just a routine arrest. They must not have thought about it at all.
Something grievous has to happen to someone to have your spinal cord severed at the neck.
Yes, that's
something
true.
Grievous has to happen.
Which
as I said when we were talking earlier, there were no diving boards around. So
which, by the way, why we don't allow, theoretically don't allow, but we know that it happens, chokeholds, because that's exactly the way something like this happens.
So my question to the political scientists in the room is how do we change this at a fundamental governmental level?
Well, I think Barbara is profound in describing this basically as a system. You know, we keep a population in poverty. We keep them, in many ways, unemployed. We say to the police, because we know where the incidents will happen, it's tough to be a cop, I'll tell you right now. We say to them, it's your job to make sure that this is done right. If you're going to arrest somebody, you do it in the right way. You can't identify people just because of their race. And then those cops go out there, and they think they're being put upon. I'm telling you that right now, that we're being asked to do the roughest stuff in the society. And every time we turn around, every time we do something, we're being held accountable. And they think that that's not right. All of us in this room think, you know, it's got to be done right.
Well, there's a police officer in Ohio, I assume people saw that.
Yes.
When the person he was trying to subdue and arrest asked him, kill me. He wanted suicide by cop, as they say. He refused to do it. And he was really in danger, from what I could say. That is, the police officer was. But he said, I'm not going to do that. And eventually, he was able to get that person calmed down.
And let's remember what a taser is. A taser was supposed to be the better alternative to shooting somebody. That's why we have them. And so now, when people start dying of being tasered or their health is compromised, we say that's no good. And so here are the cops. Put yourself into their situation. If somebody's coming at them and they use a taser and they're criticized for using a taser, then what do? I mean, that's what the thin blue line is all about. They're protecting each other. And there's a reason for that.
I was interested in, this is a slight tangent, but the, I don't know if anyone saw the story on 60 Minutes on Sunday night regarding the sarin gas. Did you see that story? Mm-hmm. CBS announced, Scott Pelley announced at the beginning of the story that they were going to be showing some of the most disturbing footage that they've shown in their 47-year history on CBS, that of people dying from sarin gas poisoning. And there's no question about it. It was deeply troubling and horrific to watch. And I did wince and look away, and I think we've all talked about this various thing about the beheadings and so forth, that, you know, we don't want to see that. But my God, you know, you look at the video that we've been the series of videos that we've been watching of various young, mostly young African-American men being treated, shot at, and that's equally horrific.
Yeah, the Eric Garner video. And, of course, the grand jury didn't see anything wrong with what occurred. He was begging for his life.
Yeah.
He was begging.
And let me just say very quickly, Joe, that our wonderful Maggie Buchwald, who quite frequently lets us know when we're doing something that isn't quite right, says, who's your third guest on the panel this morning?
Oh, didn't I introduce everybody?
I don't think you did.
Oh, okay. So WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, Joe.
Essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith is here.
Hi, Joe.
We were so excited to get into the topics. I apologize for not introducing everyone. Audio name tags. SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here.
Hello.
And we are very glad that everyone is here because we talked for a bit about the subject. We are late on a break, so we're going to go take two breaks at once.
Oh boy,
and
two
we will be two for one. And we'll be back after a BBC news break. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, or again, wamc.org/roundtable. And we will return after this short break. This is cool. What's this music? Ludovico Einaudi? Very cool. Thank you, Dave Hopper, our engineer and musical genius.
And more, this show is getting to be about music.
It is. It does seem to get the mailbag flowing. Anyway, we enjoy hearing from you. All you have to do is write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. If you missed the introductions at the beginning of the show, you didn't, because I didn't do them. So let me do them again. WAMC's Alan Chartok, essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith is in the house, and SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here. We welcome your comments, and we have a few letters, and then we'll get to other stuff.
Yes, it's true. And the rules of letters are, Joe?
The rules of the letters are very simple. 140 characters. We ask for the sort of the Twitter policy to keep it quick so we can get on to other letters if we're going to read them on the air. We ask that you don't send links or things, and one to a customer. If you've already gotten in on the game, that's great. We love that you're listening, but let other people get in as well.
Okay, so, not picking on Alan here, says John, I believe. But he forgot something when he listed what America's been doing to its black citizens. To wit, we keep them in poverty, and whenever African Americans have tried to improve their conditions, form their own businesses, and seek success, white Americans burn down these businesses and then call it a race riot. Tulsa race riots, anyway. I mean, that may be a little over the top. I happen to think it's a lot more subtle than that. We don't go down burning things. We just don't give opportunities. And I think
that's historical reference, though. Tulsa.
No, of course I do.
Yeah, the Tulsa race riots of the early 1900s,
right.
Where they burned down the most prosperous black business district in the entire nation.
Joel says, Joe asked the question, what is the governmental response to these police brutality incidents? Unfortunately, Joe, as we have seen throughout the decades, any government response is useless. It's up to the individual. Here are a few tips. If you have criminal tendencies, don't act on them. Two, do not resist arrest if you are right and they are wrong. Sue them later. And three, when asked politely by authority, respond politely, but know your rights. Thanks for the great show, as always. And Ted says, our culture, society is changing, not at all for the better. I'm not sure what was covered at the New York State Prevent Child Abuse Conference that was in Albany last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think it would provide food for thought on this topic. And then it goes on beyond what you just said in terms of characters.
Yes.
Okay. And Allison says, thanks for having Barbara. So important to have her voice. And Rachel says, I don't know what that's. She forwarded something. Eileen says, as you know, there may never be a moral imperative to make changes in terms of racism in this country, despite the horrific events we have witnessed, just as we have made major advances for gay rights simply due to financial gains. Indiana, as example, tourism industry, businesses that benefit from, quote, gay money. It is sad to note this, but this may be the only avenue to a major change in the racist attitudes of police agencies and others. In what form? Major financial compensation for such crimes. Cameras are a beginning. Now the powers that be must feel it economically, because more often than not, this is what speaks to our country, money. And Michael says, Socrates once said, the only evil is ignorance, the only good knowledge. The solution is education on both sides to respect all individuals as human beings like themselves. And Philip says, bravo to all of you for having Barbara Smith on. And Tom says, we want the cops to keep us safe, and that means we give the cops carte blanche to keep us safe. And I guess I'm thinking that's it.
I don't like that carte blanche concept. That's difficult for me.
Well, I don't think, by the way, that it was meant. This is what we have. This is our problem.
Right.
We grant carte blanche.
Right.
And I've been saying that, for a long time, mm-hmm. which is why police are in such a bad spot. Now, Barbara, you've talked to a lot of police folks over your time. And, these are people with families. These are people who want to stay safe. These are people who think that they're being picked on quite often. It's so easy to project into what they're up against.
The police officers have told me that what they want more than anything at the end of the day is to go home safe to their families.
Exactly.
I believe that people going to a convenience store or to, walking in a, driving in a new vehicle and just having a good time doing that, they also would like to go home safely.
Yep.
I think, there's just this incredible dynamic. I don't think that most police officers are violent and vicious. I do think we have a system that has been embedded historically and socially and politically in this country that gets us some really bad results when the two communities come together and face off, because police deal with the lowest moments of people's lives in general. We have the problem in other institutions as well. It's just that those other institutions aren't charged with preventing violence and keeping people safe. So it's it's a big societal problem. Some of us would like to try to solve it.
From the beginning, we really do have to see how it all evolves socially, economically. You take somebody who is a slave and you say to them, okay, you're not a slave anymore, but you make sure that they are kept in an economic slavery.
No, Jim Crow.
That's the whole point. And then when they go north, and go to Detroit, got to get other jobs, that's when these police agencies have to deal with the consequences of this incredible system
of overcrowding, of poverty, of lack of education, lack of access to economic opportunity, on and on. I bet we have some other things to talk about today, though.
We do.
I'm ready.
Well, we do, but thank you. All right, let's go to the issue of, well, we can probably hit this one quick because then we have a break, but Mayor de Blasio and his national bid. There was an article in, is it the Daily News? Yes, by Errol Lewis today about saying that Mayor de Blasio isn't running for president, but to be a successful mayor, he may have to pretend he is, and that won't be easy.
By the way, that's old hat. Cuomo used to do it all the time. I believe every time somebody said Cuomo was running for the presidency, his polling numbers went up because people said, well, if they want him for president, he must be a good governor. So I think that this is something that happens. Also, de Blasio really does want to be the symbol of, the liberal side of the left side of the Democratic Party. His problem is that as mayor, he can't really do that, especially when he makes the argument for the kind of economic development that a city must have and also to make sure that a Zephyr Teachout can't be the candidate. And he did. He was the guy who did it in the Working Families Party. He stood up there, and he got her knocked off. I'm not saying who he got knocked in, because we all know.
I think it's dangerous to mess with the Clintons. He's very close to both of them, and I think he is dissing Hillary, and that cannot be a good thing.
Anthony Weiner,
who has suddenly become this national spokesman, he's on all the talk shows for speaking for
I
Hillary.
Know.
Isn't that so
it's
odd?
Shocking.
I know. He suddenly her apologized. I think he said this right, though. It's like, yes, you understand the impulse. I'm going to wait and see, and maybe might not say anything. We'll push her to the liberal side, but it's not as if she hasn't been liberal, and he's a family friend. You don't audition your family friends. You just support them. And he's not doing them. And for what? He's done nothing yet. He hasn't been. How long has he been mayor? 15 minutes? And now he's going to go out and run for presidency. Why do we stand for that?
Well, what do you mean we stand for it? Anybody can do whatever they want.
American people can just say, no, go home, mayor. Go take care of New York before you tell us you want to be our boss.
By the way, they are doing that.
Well, that's good.
You don't see an overwhelming.
Well, we haven't had any real vote yet.
Well, can I ask? Yeah. Okay, perhaps this is a naive question, but I mean, if we take it at face value, he isn't actually running for president. He is what the point that is made and the point that's made in this article
is
that he's looking and saying that the solution to many of the issues that he's dealing with are national problems and that they have to be addressed nationally.
But it's also been speculated, at least, and I think more than speculation, that what he's looking for is a draft. They all want to be drafted. Mario Cuomo, from day one, was looking to be drafted. Until the very end of the presidential selection thing, he was sending out hints that under the right kind of scenario, he could be drafted to be president.
Well, now, then that goes to Rosemary's point, then.
Mm-hmm. Which is, again, reiterated.
What has he done? And it's only been 15 minutes.
Well, and I'll tell you something else. If the murder rate continues to go up in New York City.
Yeah, he might not even be mayor.
He won't be mayor.
Yeah.
Because it's the one thing the middle class care about more than anything else, and they are the voters.
Mm-hmm. One other story that I want to get to before the break, and that is Mohamed Morsi, the deposed president of Egypt, was sentenced after being convicted of charges stemming from a night of bloody street fighting between his supporters and opponents in 2012.
Yeah,
what was
he
the
was,
sentence?
He was 20 years, and he was not given the death penalty that he might have. Smart, this
well,
guy, CC, yeah, not going to make him a martyr. He'll have a hard time.
20 years is a long time.
In Egyptian prison? Yeah, I guess so.
He
deserves it, though. I mean, he was shooting on his own people.
Well, what? The military weren't shooting on their own people.
Yeah, the
you know, the guys who are in power right now and who I'm not arguing with you, by the way. You know,
he ordered it. It was under his watch that maybe it was the military, maybe it was militias. We don't really know, but they were in firing and
Mubarak,
killing people.
And Assisi and you know themselves. You think those guys, if they were sitting up there on trial right now, if the other guys were in power, there wouldn't be the same accusation against them? When
the
they
difference
put down
is that he was democratically elected. He had a chance to really make a difference. He could have been here. Egypt had gone through this revolution and elected him. It was a chance for the Muslim Brotherhood to show it could govern. And he did the same thing as Mubarak. That's why he's ousted. It was a terrible move, and it was a loss to Egypt and to democracy and to the era.
It's so easy for you to say that, but I'm not so sure you're right. I mean, I can see scenarios in America where democratically, we've been talking about some of them, where democratically elected mayors and others say to their police force, keep the order and do what you have to do.
Okay, yes, it does happen. And whenever there are Americans shot at by their government, there's hell to pay. Kent State, let's go back to that, where students were protesting, legal protests, and they were shot on their own campus.
Murdered.
Yeah, that was an anomaly. There were only 4 people killed there, Egypt.
To be fair, people should have been outraged. Kent State was terrible, and that really was murder. But I think that there are other situations where if blocks are being burned down, police are told
but
by
they
the...
Weren't.
No,
they
no.
They weren't in Egypt. Wait, no. Alan, I guess I'm a little bit confused at what you're arguing about. What's the point I've made that you're disagreeing with?
Well, I'm disagreeing...
That he should have gotten less than 20 years or more than 20 years?
No, I think you're making the point that this guy, as opposed to the guys who came before him, I don't want to put words in your mouth, was democratically elected. Therefore, we could hold him to a standard that we couldn't hold the other guys to.
Correct. And the United States should have done this, I think, with Mubarak. He did horrible things, too, but he made Egypt pro-America in the Middle East.
Exactly.
And so we supported him, and we're doing the same with Sisi. Yes. But the United States doesn't decide. It's not the justice system in Egypt. It's,
Barbara, you want to in on this, or are you just enjoying it like I am?
No,
okay,
I'm not sure what I'm arguing.
I think that's right.
I'm going to stop. Let's go on.
Okay, we'll take a break, and we'll figure out what position we're on, and then we'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, certified financial planner serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed at HavikanWealthStrategies.com. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, silver, antiques, fine art, and estates. MarkLawson.com. Russell Wright's Manitoga, Garrison, New York, featuring 2015 resident artist Stephen Telasnik's Floating Installation Sanctuary. Tours Friday through Monday, beginning in May. Visit Manitoga.org. And the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, and thank you very much for being with us. We do have other issues to get to. We'll get to a couple letters before we do that, and then we'll get on with the discussion. I want to talk about the story, too, sort of dual stories regarding breast cancer that I want to get to.
Sure.
And but first, we'll take a letter or two or three.
Here's a critical letter. I emailed you before about your roundtable guest. I'm not happy then. I was not happy then, and today they really went over the top. Please, if there's any honesty in your show, fact check all the sad and incorrect comments about police officers around the country that they made, and sadly, you also. I know you won't, this is addressed to Joe, and you will continue to cater to their ignorance. Well, I take great exception to that. I don't think
what,
you said
what
anything.
Were, what were the no. comments we made that were no, over I don't, the top
I,
and ignorant?
I don't
no,
think.
I think we talked about the dynamics between communities of color and law enforcement, which is a reality that's manifesting itself all over the country.
Sure.
I think we also talked about what a difficult job it is to be a police officer and how they want to go home safe every night and how they're with people in some of the lowest moments of their lives. I think we are pretty balanced
Me
about
too.
That.
I would say fair and balanced, but that those words have
bad
connotation
I'd say balance
these
without
days.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so Tad says, I'm not good with the computer skills. I hope my note will be shared with your panel members and taken seriously by broadcasters there. I've listened to a season of Vermont legislators meeting and pronouncing results, never getting at causes, useful remedies. They keep working at responses to atrocities. Thanks from Ted. And then Bill says, I listened to your roundtable this AM. I believe this video is shown at police academies, how not to do it. I'm not sure why anyone would want to be a cop. Damned if you do and damned if you don't. I think I used those very words this morning.
I think people, could I just say,
yeah,
I
sure.
think people are motivated to be police officers by some of the same motivations that people choose to be teachers, social
sure.
workers, counselors, psychologists. It is, in many people's minds, a helping profession on the front line.
Sure.
So that's, you know, that's something I found out during my time as an elected person in Albany.
Yep. And Bill says sometimes in a split second you have to make a choice. And then, whatever happened, it's nothing showed up from Heidi. Yep, nothing showed up. That's too bad. Okay, so there's a lot more, but, you know, Joe, we have other things fish to fry here.
Okay, let's talk about the stories that we, as I said, there's a pair of stories, interesting stories about breast cancer. The one in the Washington Post was breast cancer is predicted to rise by 50% by 2030. The report from the National Cancer Institute on Monday said the number of breast cancers suffered by women will increase by about 50% by 2030. Breast cancers are already the most common form of cancer in the United States, with 283,000 diagnosed cases in 2011. The number is predicted to rise to about 441,000 in 2030, according to a senior investigator in the Division of Cancer Epidemiology and Genetics of the National Cancer Institute. In a more optimistic development, the report forecast a decline in the number of breast cancers that are not receptive to estrogen. And then we go to the front page story in the New York Times this morning, which says that the low-cost tests to gauge risk of breast cancer show promise, that two Silicon Valley startup with some big-name backers is threatening to upend genetic screening for breast and ovarian cancer by offering a test on a sample of saliva that is so inexpensive that most women could get it.
You know, that's so interesting because we were talking before about why we see an uptick in racist crimes, and I said, because we're detecting, you know, more of them. I think that's also true of breast cancer to some degree. You know, if people are getting mammograms on a regular basis, if they're watching out for themselves, and now if we get this kind of new technology, you're going to see a hell of a rise in the potential for breast cancer.
But also better outcomes as far as treatment is concerned,
sure.
because I assume that those would be caught very early.
Yeah.
That's a great... I didn't see that. That's great to find out. When I saw the original article, though, about the rise, I immediately thought it's because of the baby boom, because incidence of breast cancer rises
group.
With age.
Yes.
So a lot of people don't know that.
Oh,
and if you get breast cancer pre-menopause, it's generally much more serious and potentially, you know, dangerous and even fatal, because you're still in your reproductive years. But the thing is, as I said, those numbers do rise as women get older.
Okay, I just want to point out that we have amazing preponderance of our awareness for women who have cancer is on breast cancer. And it's great that we've made advances, but there's so much money and emphasis placed on that that other cancers, like ovarian cancer, for example, get ignored. And that's far harder to predict when you get it. When you do detect it, you're likely to be so far along you cannot be saved. And I would like to see some of the attention and the pink ribbons and the races turn to ovarian cancer. And I'm saying that for my sister Lisa, who works in preventing and treating cancer in women.
Wow, you are so impressive. Every day we hear about a different of your sisters.
I have many sisters.
Yesterday we heard about the Washington Post, right?
Yes.
And today we heard about this wonderful sister who does cancer stuff. That's great.
I have another one who's a midwife, another who's a veterinarian. Any story you give me, I can pitch a sister.
Wow. And all I have is a twin.
That's twins. We have twins here.
Well, I shouldn't say that all I have because
yes, that's
he's done quite a bit too.
Yes. That's right. All right, let's go to another topic. Are we done on that? Yes?
Yes.
We're good? Okay. We have 3 minutes. Who wants to talk about the Pulitzers?
Sure. I think that we should always take the opportunity to showcase amazing work by journalists. They are so important in our society.
But are they representative of the best work that's being done in journalism?
Yes, they are.
Well,
yes.
The top award?
Yeah.
For the newspaper
Domestic violence.
In South Carolina. I started reading those stories yesterday.
Fascinating, aren't they?
Before we got our crib notes for today, I just started reading them. I've never seen articles like that. Uh-huh. They're like 6 or 7 articles. They go at it every single way there is, and they're long researched articles with vivid examples. One of the things that struck me, I think everybody should read the Pulitzer Prize winning stories from the South Carolina newspaper.
Well, and I do think that's the great thing about when you have awards like this where you do showcase, I mean, you could say this about any awards competition, that it does showcase things that perhaps would have fallen below your radar anyway.
I'll tell you one thing, it's a great morale builder. We're not allowed to talk about them yet. We're about to get a whole host of awards for the work that's been done by our news division here. They let you know in advance, and then they say, shut up, not till we tell you. So it's really going to be so, and the morale building that goes on when that happens is extraordinary.
I would just want to mention the name of the newspaper, too, in case listeners are wondering what newspaper. It's the Post and Courier in Charleston, South Carolina.
Which is great to hear a smaller paper.
Yeah, it's increasingly rare, actually, as we've had downsizing and newspapers have lost people and lost talent. You're going to see the L.A. Times, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal win most of the prizes. And that has happened.
In many cases,
and
yes.
That continues to happen
now. And you get people like Mary Beth Pfeiffer at the Poughkeepsie Journal. Who is an investigative reporter?
Yes.
Papers can't
support them.
Yeah, right,
they can't support. It's expensive and legally and just travel and time for investigative reporters. It is the most expensive of reporting.
Well,
so we're losing it.
And a quick shout out to Elizabeth Colbert, who has done some wonderful environmental reporting in her book. She is in Williamstown, Massachusetts, and. A great friend to this program, but she has written The Sixth Extinction and that one for general nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And I do have to say that they chose for fiction All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, which really was one of the best novels I read last year. So good for that as well.
I have not read that. That you recommended.
Yes.
Pulitzer and Joe Donahue like it, so we've got to get that.
I would say Joe. I take Joe's word any day.
Good stuff. All right, we are done. Thank you very much for being with us, and we always welcome your letters. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'll return tomorrow with another panel, and the program continues after the short break.